Welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody is doing well out there. Joe Rex Road, what's going on? How are we doing?
Forgot to connect on Zoom. I'm sorry. Don't tell Chase.
That means we have robbed the people of your pretty face for at least, I don't know, a minute.
Yeah. I mean, I'll try to make up for it with some batting of eyelashes or something at some point during the show.
You should. You know,
a little extra.
Please do.
A little extra spice for you.
Yes. Michelle, what's going on? How are we doing?
Doing good today, guys. I have a busy weekend. It's already Thursday, so that means it's almost Friday, so that means the week's practically over. Woke up with a lot of energy and have been sticking to the one coffee a day.
Wow.
Good.
I'm kind of impressed you made it this long doing that.
I am too.
So, and you have it now?
I do. So yeah. I do like one large right around 5:30. I start drinking it. And then I've switched to like iced tea or something a little less aggressive in the afternoon.
Okay.
But it's been hard. I took a couple naps yesterday.
Nice. Multiple naps?
Like 2 45-minute naps.
Okay. All right.
Okay. You gonna let me in the meeting room?
No.
No. I mean, at this point, there's got to be some people out there that are, you know,
panicking,
freaking out. Yeah. You know, 6:01.
I'm like, where's Joe?
There
it is. Joe Rex Road.
Man, there it is.
Oh, my goodness.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, to that point, we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. A couple of big games last night to get into. We'll start on the hoops front with the Vols and Mississippi State. Tennessee gets it done 72-63. Joe, it looked like there may be a moment where you were pretty worried about Kennedy Chandler in terms of maybe going down with an injury. I guess it was cramps. He comes back in the game and, you know, hits some big shots down the stretch. Tennessee gets it done last night. They win 72-63 against Mississippi State.
Yeah, you don't too often see someone like grab the knee and then it be a cramp. Someone tweeted at me like, when you're that level of athlete, you can have cramps there too. I'm like, really? Okay.
I guess.
You have muscles all over the place. But yes, I mean, he couldn't put any weight on his right leg, and he's holding his knee. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Not good.
And so I'm immediately go to Vol Twitter, which is immediately forecasting the end of the season. And then, I mean, maybe a minute of game time later, he comes back in. Yeah. A few minutes on the bench, and he's back in, and he finished the game just fine. And good win. I mean, Mississippi State is not a great team. They're I mean, you know, they're like a bubble team. They're on the fringe of being an NCAA tournament team that's on the road. The Vols started well, fell behind, had to fight back. And, of course, this is the first game without Olivia Kamwa. And they you saw some freshmen. Jonas Adu, who's had, like, issues. He's been on, like, the COVID list, and he's had other injuries and stuff like that. Or at least illnesses, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, man. You can see 6'11" and tremendous length. So both of those freshmen, you can see the talent and ability. They went big most of the game, and it worked out for them. And, you know, Josiah James now is hitting every shot, so that helps too.
Yeah, if you're going to get this offensively from him, then you're probably going to be in a good spot if you're Tennessee. 18 last night from Josiah James. He shot 7 of 12 from the field, shot 3 of 6 from 3 last night. So, you know, anytime he's shooting 50% from 3, probably going to be in good shape.
Yep, and then Kennedy Chandler, you know, other than the scare, he was really good. I mean, I think he's starting to figure out, like, when to go, when not to go. It's not easy. As a freshman point guard for Rick Barnes, there's no way it's easy. But you have him, I mean, Ziegler and Chandler, you know, together closing that game out.
My guy Ziegler,
pretty good, man.
11 points in 17 minutes, man. Just a machine out there.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as Chandler went out, he immediately made a couple huge plays, and then Vescovy's really good. So you got four people, you know, and they're all perimeter players, really. I mean, Josiah James plays the four a lot, but they're basically all perimeter players. Those four are really good. And, you know, Tennessee 17-6, 8-3 in the SEC, probably right around a 4 or 5 seed right now. Kind of got things figured out. I mean, that's three straight good offensive games for this team.
And now they'll take on Vanderbilt coming up on Saturday in what could be an interesting game. It'll be at home at Thompson Bowling Arena. And then they'll stay at home on Tuesday night when Kentucky comes in, and then they go to Arkansas. So it's a pretty interesting three-game stretch they got coming up.
It is. It is. Like I said, Adu, 12 minutes, and you can just see the presence. We'll see like how that shakes out. But of course, when Vanderbilt, the first meeting, Vanderbilt did not have Rodney Chapman or Liam Robbins, and they'll have them both Saturday. So I think it could be interesting. And especially, like you said, you got those huge games coming up. You got Kentucky coming up. You cannot be caught looking ahead at all if you're the Vols.
Preds in action last night, back on the road against the Dallas Stars. They fall 4-3 at the hands of the Stars last night. Quite frankly, Joe, it was pretty sloppy from the Nashville Predators. I don't think that's entirely unexpected when you're coming off an all-star break like the Predators were. I mean, the first, honestly, 10-15 minutes of that game were pretty hard to watch based on just the parade to the penalty box that both teams were taking. The Predators had the puck for basically the first 5 minutes of the game and generated like two shots on goal out of it, which was not good. But
they were cycling.
They were
just
cycling.
Not shooting.
They weren't shooting very much, but we're cycling. So I guess that part of it's good. But just one of those things where it looked like a really sloppy game last night from the Predators. And the execution part of it wasn't there. I'm not really all that concerned about that because I think for the most part their execution has been pretty good this year. The penalties were a huge issue last night. Huge issue, and that's not a new thing. Chris Mason talked about that earlier this week. The penalties at times have been a problem with this team, and that can't continue. Some of the stick fouls last night are just stupid. I mean, Ben Harper had, a penalty, or a tripping penalty. Yossi had a tripping penalty. I mean, just some of the stick fouls, they've really got to get cleaned up because, I mean, two power play goals for Dallas last night, that's the difference in the game right there.
Yeah, stick penalties and then other mistakes, I thought were really costly. I'm trying to find the John Hines quote. So he listed out after the game 9 odd man rushes. This is Hines said, spent over 20% of the game on the PK, 6 penalties, and then you talk about 5-on-3, 4-on-3, 9 odd man rushes, 2 breakaways, 2 2-on-1s, 5 3-on-2s. He had it all listed out. It was very sloppy, and lacking discipline performance.
It was, and those are the type of games that, even if you get a point last night, if they're able to go into overtime and lose and get a point, that's still a pretty important point because what you don't want to do is allow Dallas to kind of creep back in there and really get, involved in this race coming down the stretch. I mean, we've talked about it. Predators played a lot of games. They've played more games than most people in the league. So, you've got to keep winning these divisional games. Duchesne scores again last night, so it's good to see him pick it back up where he left off. Trennan with a nice goal last night. The first, goal that Dallas scores, I've got a problem with. They go back and they review Trennan's hit on Klingberg for a hit to the head after they don't call it originally. So you go and you take it from a situation where nothing is called to, all right, well, we're going to go review it for head contact.
Well, you called a major.
Yeah, you called a major.
And then you change it.
And then
right.
you called a major. But the thing is, if that play's not a major, then it's not a penalty because you just call it. But after you go review it, it has to be a penalty.
It has to be.
It has to be
a two-minute minor.
It's so stupid.
Yeah, we've talked about that rule before. And no, I agree. They've got to change that. That doesn't make sense.
And then Dallas scores right after that. I mean, right. I understand Ben was in the box, but Dallas scores right after that. And it's stupid that that's still a thing in the NHL. But that's not the reason the Predators lost the game last night. When you have like 4 tripping penalties and you have a delay of game from 190 feet away, which was impressive by Philip Forsberger, that the delay of game came from the D zone and went over the glass, basically in the corner in the offensive zone. That's pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, it's just some weird stuff. I mean, I thought when the Trennan goal, which is what, with like 9 seconds left, twice they scored to quickly answer, Stars goals, especially the Duchesne. But when the Trennan goal, and then, of course they challenged that, which was dumb. That was not
maybe the dumbest challenge I've ever seen in NHL history.
That was pretty dumb. That's a bold statement, though.
It was pretty stupid.
It was pretty dumb. But I thought that goal might be a backbreaker for Dallas, you know. But I just didn't – along with the mistakes and everything, after the first 10 minutes, I just didn't think the Preds were really able to sustain much. And that probably has something to do with being in the box all night. I mean, that's going to mess you up if you're, you know, if you're spending a period in the box in some way. Like, think about the strain that has on your lineup.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. So that's a tough loss for the Predators last night. They'll be back at it coming up on Saturday against Winnipeg. You're going to have to clean up the penalties. That's something that if I'm John Hines, I am driving home the next few days is, all right, we've talked about this. It seemed like they were somewhat making progress before the break. You know, you can live with, at least I can live with penalties that are maybe on the edge of you being too physical and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not talking about major quality penalties, but minor penalties would basically just come from aggression. When you start doing the hooking and the holding and the trippings, I mean, that's not good. That's a way to get you beat. Not only in playoff time, but come down the stretch of the regular season. Like, you can't have that. So John Hines, I'm sure, will pay a lot of attention to that. Leading up to the Winnipeg game, we'll have Todd Richards, Preds assistant coach, joining the show at 8:30. We'll continue the conversation. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Thursday morning. We did not go back in time. Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I have abandoned Joe Rex Road on the video stream right now. My computer is completely shut down, and now it's just Joe Rex Road's head enlarged on the video stream. So check that out for your viewing pleasure on Twitter or YouTube
this
or Facebook.
This makes up for earlier when I wasn't on there at all. Now it's a huge.
I fixed the sizing, though, so it wasn't like a really big close-up.
Oh, okay.
So now there's a little headroom and everything.
And everybody let me know. I can always throw my feet on here, too. I know some of you are interested in those. So.
Yeah. Freshly pedicured.
Sadly, no.
We can fix that. There are people interested in fixing that.
We've been trying to get a petty going.
See, I still never really understood that. I came in after that joke, and it's just very strange to me.
Well,
I mean, we had a whole thing going, which really, like I think we have the bet result, but now Porth's gone anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the game never happened. We can't have the result. The game never happened.
But I was right. So.
We'll go with that. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Will in Kentucky, texting in, says, the first 5 minutes of the Sloppeters game was great. After that, it was going to be, one of those type of game deals. The Sloppeters. They kind of looked like that last night. Not the Predators. The Sloppeters.
I have not heard that one before.
I haven't either.
Yeah. Again, early on, it was just, I mean, my gosh, the Stars could not
get the puck.
Could not get the puck at all. Yeah. But again, it was like, they never got any shots off, or they never got any shots to the net. I think they missed wide a couple times.
Dallas did a good job of kind of clogging up the shooting lanes. Now, I will say there were some, I can think about three, where the Predators, they just missed. Like, they were Michael McCarron. Tomasino made a great play. It was a kind of a 2-on-1 rush, and Tomasino held off the defender long enough, got the puck to the middle of the ice, and McCarron was all by himself in front of the net, and I guess tried to just redirect it on the backhand, and it went about 8 feet wide to the right. And I was like, maybe one of those things where you just try to corral the puck and, you know, take a shot.
Foul ball.
What did you think of the Tolvanen goal? I thought on first blush that McCarron got it. And then they showed the replay again, and I was like, I don't know. And then Keith Jones and Eddie Olczyk on the broadcast were just convinced that he got it. So I don't know. Tolvanen ends up getting the goal. Did you think McCarron got a piece of it?
At first I did, but yeah, when you look at the replay, I think it's clear that he didn't touch it. It's just obviously he slapped at it a little bit, and it kind of looked like it changed directions, but no, I think that was Tolvanen's. And Tolvanen, you know, needed a break like that, like that, however it goes in. So, good call, Michelle.
Yeah, way to go, Michelle. Up to six now.
Listen,
that's
I'm,
two in a row
I'm
for
rolling
her.
Now.
Yeah, it's two games in a row. Michelle's on the board.
Still a long way to go, too.
Still a long. There's a lot of hockey left. Preds picked the click, by the way. Joe Rexroad has tied the listeners at 12 correct answers apiece. Pretty impressive goal by Matt Duchesne last night. That was silky hands around the net.
That was, yes. The Bobby Orr goal.
Yeah.
You know, great pass by Yossi, too, but to control it like that and finish, very impressive. So they had their again. I thought like Saros, that was another Saros deserved better game. Of the four goals he let in, I mean, we're talking just no chance, right?
Well,
I'm trying to think, unless I'm forgetting one.
Yeah,
thinking
you had two redirections basically, and then you know, poor Luke Cunning, he got caught in no man's land last night. He tried to play the puck at the blue line. And it took a hop. It was towards the end of the second period where the ice is rough down there. And it took a hop right over his stick and Roope Hintz. Great move on the breakaway there. But, yeah, like I don't know that Saros had much of a chance on any of those last night. I do want to ask you something I asked C-Mace the other day. You concerned about his workload? He's played more than any goalie in the league. He's faced more shots than any goalie in the league. Now, he also has... going into last night, the best save percentage in the league as well. So there's that you have to consider with it as well. He's still a young guy, doesn't have a lot of mileage on him. Are you concerned about how much they've used him to this point?
Well, also keep in mind, you know, they've played 47 games. So, I mean, you know, there's a couple teams in the league that have played more games than them, like the Red Wings, Capitals. There's a few teams at 48, Golden Knights, Ducks, Canucks, you know. They've played 47, so you know that's there should be a little bit more breathing room at points moving forward. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think it. I think it's something to monitor and watch. Still very young. I think you do want to feel good enough about your backup that you could give them just the non back to back rest here and there too. But that's also, you know, where they are right now. In the standings, I mean, you know, they're a point ahead of the Wild, but the Wild have five games in hand.
Yeah.
They're 3 points ahead of the Blues. The Blues have three games in hand. And like you said, you know, you don't want to let the Stars have life and get back into this thing. The Stars are still a dangerous team, plenty of talent. So that's the problem is you may just be in a situation like every chance that if Saros can go, you got to go with him, right?
Well, yeah, and I think you've reached the point in his career where until he gives you a sign that he can't handle that or you need to back off a little bit, then maybe you just go with it at that point. Like, I mean, look, that position is different now. You don't really see guys play 70 games anymore like you used to. Do I think Saros could probably handle 70 games right now? Yeah, I think he probably could. I mean, I'm pretty sure, and I can look this up, but I think – early on in Pekka's career, I think he may have hit the 70 game total one year. So, you know, again, it's not the way really the game is played anymore. But the problem is the schedule in February. Like, we may not see Riddick the rest of the month based on the way the schedule lays out, because the Predators actually have some pretty good, you know, time to rest in the month of February. As soon as that calendar flips to March and April, you're playing every other day, sometimes back to back. So there's a lot of games in March and April. So, you know, C-Mace talked about this the other day. You're going to see more of the backup goaltender as the season goes along here. The problem is those games become more and more important as the season goes along as well. So it would be great to already feel good about the backup goaltending situation right now. You look at Riddick's numbers, they're not great. I do think there have been some games where he's played really well in that, but when it's this short of a sample size, I don't know that I have a definitive opinion on him one way or the other yet.
Yeah, and maybe Connor Ingram becomes a better option. I don't know.
Well, the way he's playing right now, he might. He's been awesome in Milwaukee as of late. And, you know, at some point, I think the plan is for him to be the backup. I guess the question, if you're the Predators, that I think is a difficult one to try to sort through is, all right, he's playing every night right now in Milwaukee. That's good for his development. that team is starting to make a run. They're starting to figure some things out down there. Is it more important long-term for him to keep playing up there, or is, if you feel like he's your better option, do you bring him down here right now for the NHL team? That's a tough decision. But if you feel like it's overwhelming that he's the better option, I feel like you got to do it at that point if you're the Predators.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, in the way things are shaking out with this club, with Askarov waiting in the wings down the road here, I mean, Connor Ingram is probably a backup here, and then potentially maybe he gets an opportunity somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's – so, I mean, his development is great, and there are benefits to that, but if he's gotten to a certain point where he could be your better option, I think you have to do it.
Ryan in Nashville texting in says, the Preds had the puck on a string in the beginning of the first period before the Benn and Trennan penalty, and you could only muster up 4 shots on goal. The whole time they had the puck, it was on the boards with little to no net front presence. All Dallas had to do is weather the storm like they did and get a chance to strike. It's coming from Ryan in Nashville. Yeah, I mean, look, they needed to do a better job last night of getting towards the middle. I think this team is way more equipped than they were a couple years ago. Like, think about the playoff series against Dallas. They couldn't approach the middle. They didn't have anybody they could get there on a consistent basis. Apparently, other than Rocco, who just, I guess, slid under them and got to the middle of the ice there. But this team is well-equipped. Now, let's not act like they didn't get there at all last night. I mean, Trennan is crashing and banging away and scores a goal from the crease.
That was exactly.
Duchesne's right in front of the net. So they got there a few times. I just felt like in the first period when they were really dominating, they didn't get there quite enough.
Agree. But like if you can keep that going, you know, eventually you're going to get better opportunities, and the problem is you start the parade to the box and then everything gets thrown sideways. I mean penalties. When's the last time penalties were a huge problem for the Preds? Well, it was actually the President's Trophy team, right? That was the one thing that was the problem, was that they were going to the box too much, right?
Yeah.
So this is the most fun team to watch since then, and maybe the most penalty-prone team since then.
It is. Well, maybe that's the key. You want to have a fun hockey team, get them to the box, baby.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes it's fun to see how these guys do go to the box, you know, especially if it's like Janot involved or something.
That's true.
Last night was just a bunch of just stick penalties that you gotta try to curb those.
By the way, no Mark Borowiecki last night, no Matt Benning either. So that required Ben Harper and Philip Myers to be in the game.
And I thought Philip Myers was okay.
They're okay.
Philip Myers did some good things out there.
There were not some. What about Ben Harper?
Well, I mean, I didn't notice anything terrible.
No, I mean, he took a penalty, but he get in line last night.
Exactly. Yeah, that was a mandatory part of being in the lineup last night.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. When we come back, someone is trying to steal credit away from Joe Rexroad. We'll get to the bottom of this on the other side. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. .5 The Game has your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Daytona 500 presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue in West Nashville. Shop local, shop social. Be listening during the 8 o'clock hour today for the cue to call for your chance to qualify to win a pair of tickets to the Daytona 500 coming up on Sunday, February the 20th, and access to the Fan Zone as well. The winner will be announced on Friday in the 5 o'clock hour with Stillman & Company, so be sure to catch the Daytona 500 coming up on 102.5 The Game, Nashville's official home for NASCAR. Do let me some Daytona 500.
Yes.
Shake and bake Ricky Bobby.
Yeah. Get out there. It's my favorite race of the year.
Is that right?
It is. Well, it's like it's NASCAR's Super Bowl, and they do it first. I've always found that fascinating. It's their biggest race.
They
like,
go back to the track.
Right out of the gate.
They go back to the track later, but yes.
They do.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of, I kind of like that, though. Start, you know, start with your big gun right away.
Yeah.
Kind of like in the game of euchre. Sometimes you start with the Bauer. Anybody play euchre? Right.
Yes.
You play euchre?
I don't consistently. I have played euchre.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
Michelle?
There's no way she knows what that is.
I have no idea what euchre is.
Really?
Is it a video game?
It is not.
No, it's a card game.
I guess it could be a video game. I'm sure there's a virtual
euchre out
there somewhere.
Yeah. That's cool that you've played. Yeah, man. You're an old, also kind of Midwesternish soul, but then again, you are a big Wisconsinite.
I am.
You're an adopted Wisconsinite.
Wisconsinite, yeah.
Euchre is a great game. Have you ever played Spades?
Yes.
Okay. So Euchre is basically like a modified version of Spades when all four suits could be trump, okay?
Yeah.
Whereas Spades is always trump and you use all the cards. We have actually have some Euchre tournaments in Nolensville.
Let's get into. Come on.
Yes.
Go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Apparently, this came in yesterday, and I just missed it. It says, I just heard the advertisement for Joe versus Jared, I think once a week, and can't remember what day, but I'm taking credit for that because I said a while back we should have a Joe versus Jared boxing match, and you're even using the boxing bell in the promo. Where's my cut? I need answers. How long has Joe versus Jared on Wednesdays been a thing? This is coming from an unnamed texter who is taking credit for Joe versus Jared.
Well, first of all, you got to give us your name if you want some kind of royalties on this. You know, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah,
this fall, right? Probably.
Yeah.
Summer, fall.
Yeah, summer.
Yeah,
maybe.
Probably August.
It's been a while. Yeah, something like that. So, but hey, good call. I mean, not on the actual boxing or anything. No, don't want Jared to get hurt. Okay.
Look, he's been working out, man.
Well, this is true. He has been working. Has he put out any? I don't know.
I'd seen.
Is that on the Insta that he does that?
Yeah,
he does the Insta. The Insta. He's not doing those anymore.
No, I'm waiting for whenever Carson Wentz gets traded somewhere, it'll be on there. He'll be ready to go.
What about Cameo?
I don't know. I haven't checked his Cameo in a while.
I mean,
he has a Cameo.
We had a good time with that one day when he got Cameo. Yeah. Look at Michelle. She's just totally perplexed by this. Yeah. No, check it out. You can search up Jared on Cameo. I'm telling you.
Another enthralling edition of Jared versus Joe yesterday, in which you come out with a victory yet again. Some interesting talking points yesterday, including, I got to say, I did enjoy your thoughts on Jared and his theory that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel maybe too proud to have a big-time quarterback in here. That was an interesting way to go on that one.
So this was a close debate for Caroline because I have poo-pooed the Brady coming back.
Yeah.
Jared thinks it's more than 50% based on those answers. I was like, I'd put it about 5%. So Caroline thought that was – what do you think about that, by the way?
I'd put it higher than 5.
Yeah.
I'd put it about 15, 20%.
Yeah, okay. Okay, fine. Yeah. That's fine. I mean, more than 50% that he's going to immediately reverse course, I don't know. I don't buy it. I think we'll see. But anyway, then the other side of it, though, the reason I won is because, like, I mean, you can't help but be completely befuddled by what Jared's talking about here. Like, think about the idea that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel are making this decision, like, because of ego or because of, yes, ego is a part of, the NFL and all that. Everybody has ego. Anybody who achieves at the level where you get jobs like this, sure, there's some of that. But, like, imagine the idea that they're just doing this because they don't want to admit being wrong, slash they like that Tannehill is not someone who's going to rock the boat or, you know, try to take control or take too much credit. Like, basically he's using the Jerry Jones comparison and putting that on Vray Rob, if they really didn't believe in Tannehill, okay, but they're not doing this because they don't want to look like they're wrong, I guess. I'm trying to talk through this and it's hard to even like explain it because it's so ridiculous.
Well, if that was the case, take those contract extensions back first off. But I think we know that's not the case.
Right. I mean, so in the short term, then you can not admit you're wrong, but then
lose,
right? Yeah. And you know, then he's like, well, they're safe to draft the next quarterback. Okay, well, that may be true, but I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, your ego is going to really take a battering if you actually believe this is not going to work. And then it's going to go the other way. I mean, look, I could buy self-preservation to a point in the way of, well, if you do this, A, B, C, and D to get, you know, Tannehill out of here and get someone else in here, to get one of those guys in here, you're really going to eat it in a few years, right? You use your draft capital on top of the way the last couple drafts have gone, on top of whatever else you're losing, on top of people getting older, all that. Like, you could be really bad. So a little bit of a long-term view, I guess, I could buy that. And even that, I think you can argue, say, hey, no, go for it. But the idea that it's like some kind of ego thing is just, man. I mean, I think you're just scrounging for something to talk about.
Well,
I don't know.
And I will say, like, I do think there's something, too, that part of what they love about Ryan Tannehill is how he fits into their culture. He fits into their culture.
Yes.
He's helped build their culture, all those things.
That's different, though. But
yeah,
yes.
It's totally different. But I'm just saying, I think Tannehill checks a lot of boxes for what they're looking for in a quarterback. Now, the idea that he checks a lot of boxes that way and that Vrabel and Robinson would be scared of, like, a Brady or a Rodgers coming in because maybe they're a little bit bigger than that and they can, you know, Rodgers, as we know, does kind of his own thing from time to time.
Well, Brady would, you know, I'm sure Brady would want to have some say in some. Yeah, they'd probably want. But
like, are you scared of that if you're Vrabel and John Robinson? I would hope not.
No, I don't think there's a shred of truth in that.
Yeah,
not a shred. I don't think so.
No, so I don't think them if they don't pursue Aaron Rodgers, which, by the way, we'll see whether or not he's available still. That's the first thing. If they don't pursue him this offseason, I don't think that's going to be the reason why. Could be wrong. I'd be shocked. That's the reason why.
I mean, I give some marks for creativity here, you know. But I don't even. I mean, even with Jerry Jones, because Jerry Jones is the great example of, you know, obviously Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson, right?
Yep.
No, he got too much credit, and then they had a ugly divorce and all that stuff. But even Jerry Jones, I still look at more like, you know, Jared's point, like Mike McCarthy, he just wants coaches who will be like stooges for him, right? He doesn't care about having good coaches. I don't agree with that. I think he wants to win. He's just, you know, he just has these personality conflicts. And yes, ego gets into it, but it's not all like it's all about me getting the credit. I mean, he's trying to win. I don't think he's like, I don't care what kind of coach we have. Just give me somebody who I can tell what to do, like Dave Campo, you know? I mean, Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl. I don't think he's very good. I think they could do better than him.
Yeah.
But the idea that he's only there to be Jerry's stooge is, again, it's just kind of it's kind of dramatizing the reality of the situation.
I think it is. I will say, though, like Jason Garrett was there for a long time, and I'm like, you would watch the results year in, year out, and you're like, okay, why is Jason Garrett still here?
Yeah.
Like, why does this continue to happen? But I hear you. I he's trying to win. The Dallas thing is just such a different situation than really anywhere else in sports, but the league for sure.
Well, they built a good team.
Yeah. Good quarterback. So, yeah, I don't buy into the Mike Vrabel and John Robinson are scared of the ego. I have a feeling that Vrabel could probably work with any quarterback, regardless of who it is.
Yeah. Now,
unless you're just out there in open rebellion, then you got to do something. But I don't think a Brady or Rodgers would do that.
No, I mean, like, scared of distraction?
Yeah.
Maybe, to some extent. That's probably a bigger deal with Rodgers. I mean, if you had either of them, then you've got a total rock star, you know, on your team. It's a different deal. But
and then you watch him throw a football, and you're like, okay, yeah, I'll take that trade-off.
Right. But this also, as you talk all through this stuff, it's like you forget that, like, Ryan Tannehill is not the worst quarterback to ever play the position, you know? I mean, he's basically been made out to be at this point.
Did we determine where Ryan Tannehill's landing spot would be? Were the Titans able to pull off a trade? Because Jared seems to think there's a line out there of people that are ready to take on Ryan Tannehill.
We talked about that, too. He's just like, he listed them all. You know, he listed the same teams we talked about, Carolina, Washington, whoever. But again, like, yes, if you're Carolina, you need a quarterback. And you know, Tannehill would be an upgrade, but look at his contract. Look at what he just did. Everyone just saw that. I mean, yes, you'd rather go to have a chance to be a winning team and you could maybe win that division, but the idea that they're, sign me up right now for that, I think that's being a little bit wishful. But we're never going to know anyway, so we're just going to argue about what might have happened.
When we come back, we'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. I saw some numbers on the Super Bowl that took me by surprise yesterday. We'll get to some of those coming up on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The bottom line is this. Matthew Stafford has had big time moments, had a lot of game winning drives, phenomenal numbers. We know what he brings to the table. His first 12 years in Detroit. Hadn't won a single playoff game. Not one. 0-3. First of all, that means you missed the playoffs 9 times, went to the playoffs 3 times, and didn't win the game the 3 times you win the playoffs. But we continuously pointed to the Detroit Lions being a member of that organization, how that served as an impediment to his success. Fair enough. He comes to L.A., all right? Mm-hmm. What does he do? He beats Kyler Murray in Arizona. They weren't ready. DeAndre Hopkins being out didn't help matters. Then you go up against Tom Brady, okay? Yep. You up 27-3. Gave up that damn 27-3 lead. Even though he delivered the goods, connecting the cup.
Uh-huh. Okay. Position. I like how you brought that back.
I didn't forget that. But okay. The bottom line is, when you score on football, the other team gets the ball, okay? Which means that you had an opportunity to stop the bleeding, and Tom Brady almost took you out. 44-year-old Tom Brady. That's neither here nor there. Then you go against San Francisco and Jimmy Garoppolo. You handle your business. You can't go to your home turf, which is SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, California, where you are now what you now call home, and lose to Joe Burrow. You can't do that. You cannot do that. Now,
yeah, you can't.
You can't do that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And so for me, I'm looking at the way Joe, because Joe Burrow's a bad brother now.
He's a bad brother.
He's something special. Okay? And Jamar Chase is something special. Yep. We see what's going to happen with him and Jalen Ramsey. We're looking forward to that. But you, Matthew Stafford, talking about Sean McVay or whatever. Yeah, you the coach, you here. They got to go out and play. And Matthew Stafford is his guy. You got the ball in your hand. You a veteran. You ain't no second-year player in your first full season like Zach Taylor's got with Joe Burrow. No. This is Matthew Stafford. You got to close the deal. There's no question about it.
Nope.
There's more pressure on him than Sean McVay.
That was Stephen A. Smith on the pressure on Matthew Stafford heading into this game. It's an interesting question. I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways the trade for Matthew Stafford's kind of already justified, right? Now, obviously,
yes.
Winning the Super Bowl is the goal. But, I mean, he's played pretty darn well to get them to this point.
Yeah, the trade's
They're
justified.
Not in the Super Bowl if Jared Goff's quarterback.
Nah. The trade's absolutely justified. Now, the Matthew Stafford legacy, the Matthew Stafford Canton trip, stuff like that, you know, that could hinge on this. We talked about it yesterday. I mean, he's going to retire with massive numbers. And you're right, like, this era, are they massive in this era? Well, actually, I think
pretty good.
Yeah, in the context of this era, they're going to be massive. But you know, if he comes out and lays an egg, then some of the staff. But even if that's the case, how could you possibly say this wasn't the right move?
Yeah,
you got the way Super Bowl, and he, like you said, Jared Goff was. I mean, Sean McVay figured out that he couldn't go with Jared Goff. That was obvious last year when he went with the guy whose name I forget instead of him in the playoffs.
Jimmy Shapiro, our guy that we talked about the other day on the show, got an email from him, as I'm sure most of America did, from betonline.ag. They've done some geotagging around the country, which is real fancy stuff that they can do to track information. And I guess this was based off Twitter and hashtags. 33 out of the 50 states in the United States rooting for the Cincinnati Bengals, 17 rooting for the Rams, the state of Tennessee rooting for the Cincinnati Bengals. Are you surprised by that, that the state of Tennessee is rooting for the team that knocked the Titans out of the playoffs?
Well, if it's true, if the geotagging, which sounds like Facebook spying on everybody, Meta.
Yeah,
called Meta now.
Get it right.
Boy, they're taking a bath. Spying on everybody. But if it's accurate, I mean, I think there's probably a fair amount of like Titans fans who are like, well, of course, I guess they beat both these teams. So I guess it doesn't matter. They didn't beat both these teams. They beat the one team. So you could say, well, at least you feel better. The team that beat you in the playoffs wins it all, I guess. I don't know. But I think there's probably – I would hope Missouri, by the way, is cheering for the Bengals. I would assume that's a pretty – you know.
Mississippi apparently is not. Mississippi, big Rams fans.
Yeah, okay. Go Rams in Mississippi. Maybe they like Missouri's misery.
Mississippi and Arkansas, big Rams fans. Those only ones in the South.
I mean, you got two choices, you know.
That's
so,
true.
Well, maybe those states are still sore at Joe Burrow for
maybe
lighting
so.
Their teams up
Could
when he
be.
Was at LSU. I feel like there's always going to be some kind of, if an LA or New York team or something, there's some level of like, okay, you don't want that team to win just because it's LA or New York.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, the Rams, I mean, look, I mean, how do you like their ownership, you know, with what they did to St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you paid attention to all that stuff with the lawsuit still ongoing, I mean, you know, it's got to be hard to root for them. Now, I don't apply that to Sean McVay and his staff and his players, but just in terms of the franchise itself, you know, that'd be an easy way, a reason to root against the Rams. Of course, it's also the way of the NFL, and Nashville has a team because it's the way of the NFL, right? Owners, you know, essentially hold cities hostage and move to other cities if they don't give them what they want.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, just apparently America, the Bengals are now America's team heading in this matchup. We talked about this a little bit earlier this week. I am interested from a pure interest standpoint. You have two teams here. I think by and large, most people don't hate. Like, it's not like it's Tom Brady walking in here where you have pretty strong feelings on Tom Brady one way or the other. You either love him or you hate him. Like, I don't really know that many people like, man, that Matthew Stafford, can't stand that guy. Joe Burrow, can't stand him. Now, Joe Burrow, it may get there one day because I think he's going to be probably pretty regularly involved in the playoffs at this point moving forward here. I'm interested to see what the reaction is to the Super Bowl with some new blood in there.
Yeah, that's how you get to be unlike. Because, I mean, there was no reason to really dislike Tom Brady,
yeah,
you know, early on in his career. But then you just get sick of seeing him over and over again.
Deflating footballs and all that
well,
stuff.
Then that stuff happened later. And continues to, by the way, be a real thing. But but yeah, Burrow right now, early in his career. I mean, how do you not like Joe Burrow? Like Stafford, yes, I don't know why Stafford would be unlikable. Burrow to me is actively likable, with the stuff, you know, just the stuff he says, the way he goes about his business, and he's a little bit cocky, but it's in a funny way. So yeah, I'd say you get the lovable franchise that's just really been down for so long, you know, 31 years since their last playoff win and all that stuff. And small market franchise, and I think it's probably easy. That's probably why more people would probably be rooting for the Bengals, because it's just you're naturally inclined. If you don't have a dog in the hunt, you're naturally inclined to root for the more underdog team. But the Rams are pretty likable. I guess if you look at the Rams, some people don't like Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
Some people don't like Odell Beckham. But, like, how do you not like Aaron Donald, you know? And for the most part, I don't know. Sean McVay, though, is also – Sean McVay is a much more outspoken and kind of golden boy coach than Zach Taylor is. Zach Taylor's kind of understated for being, you know, this wave of young hotshot coaches. Sean McVay is probably pretty polarizing, right?
Yeah, well, especially because 2 years ago, anybody who was, you know, in the same zip code as Sean McVay was getting head coaching jobs, which really hadn't changed all that much. It's still kind of happening.
Yeah, if you passed him in the hallway in middle school, you had a chance to at least be like a quality control coach.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely pulling for the Bengals in this game. But it's not because I have, like, some major hate for the Rams. I think the Bengals story is really cool.
Yeah.
Going from not winning, you know, a playoff game in 31 years to you're in the Super Bowl now. Now, you ask me 5 years from now, I'll probably be tired of the Bengals hanging around in the playoffs. But right now, I'm rooting for the Bengals.
I think the Bengals story is really cool, too. I guess this is probably just some sort of old man yelling at cloud thing with me again, too. But I like the stories where the teams have to build up to it and then get there, you know?
Like, you don't like the out-of-nowhere stuff?
It's fine, but I know, like, for my teams growing up, like, the most satisfying runs are when you kind of gradually get to, like, which happened with the Bad Boys, with the Pistons. You know, they finally got over the hump with the Celtics, then they finally beat the Lakers. I think sometimes the out-of-the-nowhere championships aren't as enjoyable.
Well, I thought
you'll take them however you get them.
I thought Jay Morrison brought up an interesting point yesterday, like, this is Bengals fans are having so much fun with this team because it's unexpected. But from now on, this is going to be, oh, you better get Super Bowl.
Right.
Like, this is going to be the new thing for them.
Yeah. So from if you're actually a Bengals fan, yeah, I mean, first of all, it's like, please win this because you don't know. But then it is not, yeah, it won't be the same ever again.
Right.
I mean, look, even with the Titans getting to the AFC title game, that was a huge surprise, right? That team at 2-4, there was no way that team was going to get to the playoffs. They ended in the AFC championship game, and then the expectations changed. And since then, they've won a playoff game,
yeah,
which is very disappointing. But also just the, I think the conversation around a lot of stuff has changed because of them raising the expectations.
Coming up next, we'll get into the Tennessee Titans. Take a look at the defensive side of the ball. What's the checklist look like for John Robinson this offseason on that side of the ball? And how realistic is it that they can keep that side together and it could come back just as dominant as it ended the season? We'll get into that coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at Jasper's. Jasper's is a casual restaurant and bar located on West End Avenue, equipped with TVs, a game room available for private events, a grab-and-go market, and free parking. This neighborhood spot is Nashville's new go-to restaurant and bar, and you can try their selection of elevated bar food ranging from appetizers to chicken sandwiches to great flatbread pizzas and the famous Smash Burger, as well as any of their delicious cocktails. So visit my friends at Jasper's, located at 1918 West End Avenue. Once again, that's 1918 West End Avenue, and tell them that Robbie Stanley sent you.